Okay. So, I'm back at it. This is the first politics, culture, and some other shit podcast now. I'll be putting a wee video up on YouTube, but I'm going to just be doing podcasts mostly. Yeah, so this is the first one in quite a while. I took a break. I'm glad I did. I did need it. I was kind of hoping beyond hope that my lack of commentary would make the world calm down a wee bit. I thought that the universe was making planet Earth a mental place for my entertainment and just to terrorize me a little bit, but sadly no. Turns out that it's got absolutely nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. So, but there you go. Yeah, obviously we're going to talk about Gaza and Israel, a little bit of socialism, stuff like that, and some local stuff. Just because all politics is local. And community is rebellion. So let's do it. Let's get this done. So let's do it. Oh yeah, and before we but obviously, you know, start as a mean to continue, like, share, subscribe, and Patreon's back live again. So if you want to contribute, that would be great. Pound a month, that's all I charge over there. So let's do it. So the first thing we're gonna talk about is I'm gonna play you. We all know what's been going on, obviously, in Gaza, what Israel and the Zionazis have been doing over there, and it is quite, I said this to someone the other day, it is heartening to see the world finally waking up to the horror of Zionism and what Zionism is. Most people thus far didn't understand. Don't understand that the Palestinians have been going through repeated humiliations and embarrassments, massacres, for 75 years now. And Zionism is the ideology that is responsible for it. Now, what the Israeli regime has been trying to do is conflate Zionism with Judaism. They're not the same thing. There are many, many, many Jews across the world. Quite a significant amount, actually. Not just, they're not just a little minority. There's quite a lot of them that are completely opposed to the state of Israel existing as a Zionist entity. And they are making their voices heard, which is fantastic. Fair play to them. And it must be very difficult for them, because they are going to be directly confronting people within often their own families, within their own households, and certainly at the very least within their own community. So they're the bravest of all, really, outside of the Palestinians themselves. So there's ultra-Orthodox and other Jewish people inside the state of Israel itself that are actually opposed to the state of Israel existing as it does, as it wants to, as a Zionist entity. Zionism means ethno-state, a Jewish place for Jewish people. Now, me and you, probably being from the north of Ireland, I know a lot of you listening to this will be, we know we have a different version of that echoing in our recent past, a Protestant Ulster for a Protestant people. And we know it's failing, it's a failing state, it is a failed state. And it has inequity, cruelty, sectarianism built into the cake. There's just no getting around it. So Israel and the Zionist Israel is obviously the same thing. Now we know that Jews have lived in Israel since forever. Israel or Palestine since forever. They've always been there for as long as there's been Jews. That's where they come from. But we know that the settlers, the white European settler colonialists, aren't of that region. They're not native. They're not indigenous to the area. It's European colonialism in its classic sense. We're seeing it being played out in front of our eyes. It's absolutely as it's as equally fascinating as it is horrifying. We're seeing that same attitude, that same superior attitude that must have it must exist in all colonists. Whenever colonists left Europe to come, well, I'm thinking here to Ireland, obviously, but we are a part of Europe, but and across the world, they must have had that sense of superiority. And I know from reading the documents that exist from the colonization of Ireland that they did have that. They thought that we were subhuman. And it's absolutely fascinating. I was listening to a podcast the other day. It was the Irish Passport, actually. You should listen to it. And it's about the English, the Norman invasion. We're talking back in the time of Henry VIII and then, you know, Queen Victoria and stuff like that, leading right up to the plantation. They targeted Irish culture to be exterminated in an attempt to, first of all, stop their own people. That's where the phrase more Irish than the Irish comes from, because the English colonists were coming here, and then within a generation or two, they were basically full-on Gaels. They were behaving, speaking, and enjoying the life of a Gael. And they were wearing the clothes of a Gael and cutting their hair like a Gael and all this sort of stuff. So they decided to target the culture to prevent that. And you can see, and I was reading about the other day there was about the massacre on Rathlin Island way back whenever the women, the children, the elderly and the infirmed of the Yellow Glass, the famous Scottish, actually, but they lived in the north coast of Ireland, mercenary clan. They were famous mercenaries from the Middle Ages, and they put all their women on Rathlin and their children and their elderly and infirmed in order so that they could go and fight the people that were trying to take their land from them. And they didn't meet the English in battle, the English instead. And one of the English that was a part of that was Sir Francis Drake, the famous Sir Francis Drake. And they went to the island of Rathlin instead and massacred everybody, all the chasing, the hunted them around the caves and stuff, and killed them all. And basically ended the Galloglass clan, that bloodline just ended. But in order to be able to do that, you had to other, it's called othering, you had to other those humans. So you would pretend, you would tell yourself that those people weren't human, they were lesser than you, in order for you to do that huge act of cruelty. And you can see that being played out. And I was reading about this, and I was actually listening to this, and then I was reading a bit more about it. And the parallels between what you can hear when you hear Israeli spokespeople and Israeli apologists, Zionist apologists on the media, be it the British media or American media, you hear that same othering of people. I was listening to, I don't have a clip of it, but Glenn Greenwald was talking with Megyn Kelly, the Fox News, ex-Fox News anchor woman. She was a co-anchor with Bill O'Reilly, I think, at the time. And they made that movie about them. But she was doing that when Glenn Greenwald was saying, you know, this is what's happening in Iran, and this is why Iran are doing this. And she just instinctively just went into that. They saying silly shit that they were saying back in the time of the Iraq War, you know. It wasn't much of a war. It was just a complete invasion and destruction. But you know, they hate us for our freedoms. She just said, she actually said that. And it's such bullshit and clear bullshit. And you don't need to be a particularly clever person or a particularly good debater to outwit that sentiment. And Glenn Greenwald obviously did, because he is very clever and a very good debater. But it just shows you that whenever we hear about these massacres, the Flower Massacre, I was listening to one there the other, CNN put out a report about the Flower Massacre whenever, it was a couple of months ago, when they opened up on starving Gazans, when they were queuing up to, they were going to aid trucks to get food, and you can, you know, you hear the massacre being taking place because it was all filmed and stuff, and you can hear the Zionists whenever they're being asked about it, you can hear the othering of the Palestinians by the Zionists. You can hear it. They say things like, they're not like us. They want to, they're doing, when they're blaming the Palestinians of doing A, B, and C, when what they're doing to the Palestinians is far worse. They're saying, the Palestinians want to wipe us out. They said, well, they probably do now, and I wouldn't blame them, to be perfectly honest, but you're actually wiping them out. You're doing what you say they want to do to you. You know, and it doesn't really take time. And one of the things, I was listening to another podcast, and one of the things that the guy said, and it was so true, I've had a similar thought myself. He said the reason that they can do it is because they've gotten away with it for 75 years, so they can be filmed carrying out a massacre, murdering hundreds and hundreds of innocent, starving people. And they get away with it. And you go, well, how did they, why, where did they get this confidence from? We've watched the Israeli lying machine just day after day after. It's offensive. You can't even listen. It's just lies. And everything from babies in microwaves to mass rapes and all, it's all bullshit. And we've watched every lie collapse. And one of the things, there's an old saying, a lie gets around the world before the truth has a chance to get its trousers on. And that's true, but one of the reasons that they're able to do it and get away with it and keep doing it is because there's going to be another massacre tomorrow, and we're going to forget about that last one because we'll just move on to this next one. And that's a part of the energy stream that's making this narrative flow through our lives. And the Israelis, in their confidence, aren't even attempting to present credible stories or excuses for the atrocities that they're carrying out. And I said this on Twitter the other day, I just think that they are the absolute worst people on earth, and they are just the worst people on earth. They're being aided and abetted by the Yanks and the Brits and everybody else, but they're the ones that are doing the murdering and the massacring. So, Yeah, so there we go. So what I wanted to do was, for those of you that don't know, I'm sure you do, but basically I'm going to give you a little bit of reading from an article on NPR, and it's basically, what is Zionism? And one of the things that's actually fascinating, oh, I meant to get another article up for you, but I'll just click it here, actually, I'll type for it while I'm talking to you. One of the things that's actually fascinating is the connection between American evangelicals and Zionism. And if you don't know what the significance of that is, I'll just explain it to you now. So, there we go. All right, okay, we've got this. There's a red, there's a thing about red cows. It's unreal. I'll explain all this to you. Middle East, my red, there we go. Oh, 24, there we go. Right, okay, that's from July 20, or April 24, so that's current. Okay, so here is this article from NPR. It's from a few years ago, it's from 2017. But here it's titled, "To Some Zionist Christians and Jews, the Bible Says Jerusalem is Israel's Capital." This would have been around the time that Donald Trump moved, excuse me, the capital of the official capital, the American embassy. So the embassy obviously will be in the capital of the country. So he moved it to Jerusalem and sort of officially making Israel or Jerusalem the capital of the country, right? So those Jews and evangelical Christians who say an undivided Jerusalem should be the eternal capital of Israel have a ready answer for anyone who questions that claim. And the answer is this: the Bible says so. Mm-hmm. So most often cited text is 2 Chronicles 6:5-6. Wherein King Solomon quotes God as saying, "Since the day that I brought my people out of the land of Egypt, I chose no city in all the tribes of Israel in which to build a house, that my name might be there, and I choose no man as a prince over my people, Israel. But I have chosen Jerusalem, that my name may be there, and I have chosen David to be over my people, Israel." The Bible could hardly be more clear, it would seem. As far as God is concerned, Jerusalem has been the eternal, undivided capital since the reign of David, says Laurie Cardoza-Moore, whose television program Focus on Israel is aimed primarily at evangelical Christians like herself, who want to see the Bible as true and historically accurate. Jesus. God said she established... God established the boundaries of all nations, and he chose the city of Jerusalem for himself because it says in the Bible. Any UN resolution that dismisses the Bible and dismisses the history in many, many ways is irrelevant, he says. But if you go back even legally, Jerusalem was never anything but belonging to the Jewish people. So, so you've got this link between the Zionists, evangelical Christians, and the state of Israel. So, now, I'm going to do some more Bible reading for you in a moment, with the silliness that's in it. But here's an article from Al Jazeera, and it's titled, "What Do Texan Red Heifers Have to Do with Alaska and the Jewish Temple?" This is absolutely fascinating. They have come from halfway across the world and are kept under tight security, raised according to the strictest rules. There are 5 pure red heifers without blemish. For those of you that don't know, a heifer's a cow. Without blemish, who have never worked, given birth, been milked, or worn a yoke. These red heifers and the archaic ritual they were brought to Israel for, so this is, somebody's mangled this. This sentence doesn't make sense. They were brought to Israel to stand at the heart of a convoluted effort by a segment of ultra-nationalist Jews to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, the third holiest site in Islam, that has stood on the hill in the old city of Jerusalem for more than 1,000 years, and replace it with a third temple. This minority of ultra-nationalists pushed flies in the face of Jewish scholarship, which rules that a third temple can only be constructed after the coming of the awaited Messiah, to usher in the kingdom of God, not to bring about the return of the Messiah to earth. So they're actually arguing about what the text means. So they're saying they're going to bring the cows are going to bring about the Messiah, and they're saying no, the cows thing will happen after the Messiah. So members of the temple movement groups are pushing to reform Jewish rites in the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in violation of the chief rabbinate's long-standing prohibition of the presence of Jews at the Al-Aqsa due to the holiness of the site. So here's the prophecy. According to the Old Testament, the two Jewish temples that stood where the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound stands today were ritually pure, as were all instruments, garments, and people who served in them. The first temple stood from 1000 to 586 BCE, and the second from 515 to 70 AD. And the third temple is what ultra-nationalist organizations have been working towards for decades. Palestinians have for decades feared Israeli attempts to take over the Al-Aqsa, which is the direction Muslims used to pray towards before the Kaaba in Mecca. These fears have been partly accused. We'll skip through this. We'll get to the bit about the cows. Right. The search for these pure red heifers is not new. So these heifers are alleged that they're. So the pure. Sorry, just going to try to not. The purification is through a mixture of ashes of a sacred red heifer, a red yarn, cedar wood, and so they burn the heifers and then they purify. And this is a part of the ritual that is going to bring about the Messiah. There are indications that the temple movement is preparing to sacrifice a red heifer with the support of the Israeli government, according to the Israeli NGO, Ir Amim. The Israeli Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Development circumvented protocols when initially seeking permission to import the red heifers. Ir Amim noted in a report in August an example of increasing government involvement, as the US was not a country approved for the import of live animals from at the time. The Ministry of Jerusalem Affairs and Heritage delivered a speech in honour of the heifer's arrival at Ben Gurion Airport in September 22 and admitted that the ministry has been funding the development of the Mount of Olives area where the ceremony is planned. The Ministry of Agriculture, the Temple Institute and the evangelical Christian group Bona Israel did not respond to Al Jazeera's request for comment before publication, but in a video from January posted on Bona Israel's website, Michael Samuel Smith, a Christian preacher working to bring forth the temple prophecy, said the red heifers they have been raising in Shiloh have come of sacrificial age. This is the first time in nearly 2,000 years a successful red heifer has come about. Well, it haven't come about. They were imported from Texas, for fuck's sake, Smith said in the video. It is still our opinion that the first successful red heifer sacrifice will take place in the spring of 24, around the Passover to Pentecost time frame. We believe God is going to reveal himself through the efforts of this future event, and it is truly a sign of the times, most especially for Jews in Israel. Passover will be towards the end of April, while Pentecost is what is this ceremonial burning? What exactly is a red heifer? This is all not clear, according to Avi Tatarsky, a senior Ir Amim researcher. That is all not clear or known, because the last time this was done, it was when there was a Jewish temple 2,000 years ago. Defending Al-Aqsa is an important mission for Palestinian Muslims, worshippers and armed fighters alike. In a speech marking 100 days of Israel's war on Gaza, Qassam Brigade spokesperson said the red heifers are a concern and the potential sacrifice is a detestable religious myth designed for aggression against the feelings of an entire nation. So, you see the link? So the Zionist ultra-nationalists want to bring about this biblical prophecy in order to, and basically, so for the Muslims, they're basically telegraphing the fact that they're going to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build a Jewish temple on it. This red heifer prophecy is tied to that, is a big part of that, obviously. And then the Christians, and the evangelical Christians, they want to encourage this, so they're funding it. They sent the cows over, and they're encouraging this because they believe that this, whenever this happens, it will bring about the end of days. It's Armageddon. And so they're using the Jews as Jesus bait to bring Jesus back to earth, you see, from heaven. Don't you know? This all makes perfect sense. This is all fantastic stuff. Absolutely brilliant. So this is the connection. And then the evangelical people then have this, their hands are in the throats of the politicians in the US, which is why the Israeli lobby is particularly strong in America. Strong everywhere, but particularly in America. And this is why politicians can openly say that their number one priority, as they have been saying in the US, their number one priority is the defense and protection and continued support of Israel. Not of their own country, or their own constituents, of another country, of another constituency. Isn't it all fucking insane? It's all insane. But in the meantime, the price of this insanity is being paid for by people who are being genocided out of existence. It's disgusting. It was on my Twitter feed last. I'm going to a protest tomorrow or Sunday. Actually, I won't put it out actually on social media, because we're going to go and do a wee bit of naughty naughty. So I've been told not to say put it out on social media. I'm a member of the Lurgan Palestine Solidarity Committee. So, yeah. So I'll say no more about that. Actually, I shouldn't have said that. So, right. So we're going to do this bit. I'm going to call this bit dumb shit that's in the Bible. And you think the red heifer stuff was mad? Although clearly the most dangerous, but maybe not the maddest. So here we go. So I've got this article. I'm not going to read it all because it's bloody huge. And let's face it, there is a lot of stupid shit in the Bible to choose from. And by the way, just on this, I'm not having a dig at spiritual people. I'm not having a dig at people's religion or their faith or whatever brings them happiness and joy. I'm having a dig at the fucking horribleness of these things being used as excuses for people being monstrous to fellow human beings. So here we go. Number one, deformed people cannot approach God. Stupid shit that's in the Bible. And here it is. This is from Leviticus. For whatever man he be that hath a blemish, he shall not be approached. A blind man, or a lame, or he that hath a flat nose. I don't know what lames have done wrong. I know loads of lames, they're fine. L-I-A-M. or anything superfluous, or a man that is broken-footed or broken-handed or crooked back or dwarf, or that hath a blemish in his eye, or be scurvy or scabbed, or hath his stones broken. Don't know what that means. No man that hath a blemish of the seed of Aaron, the priest shall come nigh to offer the offerings of the Lord made by fire. He hath a blemish, and he shall not come nigh to offer his bread to God. Apparently God reads U.S. Weekly and takes it to heart. Although since he is all-known and all-powerful, that also means that he reads every magazine ever written. So theoretically, it's an untrue statement. God reads Out magazine. According to the Bible, people who are born with or acquire defects throughout their lives should not approach the altar of a church to make an offering because they hath a blemish. Christians are always saying God loves everyone, etc., etc. From something as superficial as a flat nose to, once again, with the broken stones, women may be inferior in God's eyes, but he sure knows how to make a man feel worthless. Broken stones, so that means something wrong with balls. Okay, so it's as literal as that. So, dumb shit that's in the Bible. Number two, non-virgins are to be stoned, as in with rocks. So here we go. This is from Deuteronomy. But if this thing be true, and the tokens of virginity may not be found for the damsel, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of the city shall stone her with stones that she die, because she hath wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house. So shalt thou put evil away from among you. So she's evil because she got her oats. And this is why I think it's absolutely reasonable to require hymen checks for all women. Dumb shit that's in the Bible, number three. A woman's punishment for defending her husband. Cut off her hand. Oh yes, there's another cracker from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy's greatest hits. When men strive together, one with another, and the wife of one draweth near, for to deliver her husband out of the hand of him that smiteth him, and putteth forth her hand, and taketh him by the secrets, then thou shalt cut off her hand. Thine eye shall not pity her. Right, okay, and it says here in the article, this one is insanely specific, which makes it much more awesome. This probably never happens, but if a faithful wife decided to defend her husband by grabbing a guy by his junk, cut off her hand. Yep. So that's a cracker. Another banger from Leviticus here. Dumb shit that's in the Bible. Number four, giving birth to a daughter makes you unclean for 66 days. But if she bear a maid child, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks, as in her separation, and she shall continue in the blood of her purifying 66 days. Leviticus. So basically what it means is, the next time one of your devout relatives or someone, that's if you wanted to throw this at someone you don't like. Right, I'll just go down the list here. Right, here's a cracker. This is number six in the list. I've skipped over number five because it was about eating babies, and I just can't go there today. And this is if your brother dies, you need to bang his wife. So this is from Mark. This is from the New Testament. This isn't all Old Testament shit. Oh no, absolutely not. This is the modern up-to-date stuff. Master, Moses wrote unto us, if a man's brother die and leave his wife behind him and leave no children, that his brother should take his wife and raise up seed unto his brother. Moses was the prophet who delivered the fellow Jews from the wicked Egyptian tyrant and led them across the parted Red Sea, wandered around a desert for 40 fucking years. That you could walk across in about 6 days, but sure, we'll say no more about that. It apparently told a speaker that if a woman is widowed, her late husband's brother should sleep with her and produce heirs for his brother. From a travelling crowd of people that were homeless for 40 years, it actually makes sense. But not so much for this day and age. Number 7, from dumb shit that's in the Bible, no bastards may enter the church. A bitch shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to his 10th generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Lord. So the description, that's from Deuteronomy. It's a cracker, isn't it? Deuteronomy, I think I might check it out a bit more. A bitch to someone who was born outside wedlock. And it means that it makes you filthy, that it takes, so filthy in fact that it takes 10 genetic steps down the line to wash away your filth. There we go. One more of these. Cursing that your parents warrants death. Leviticus again. Leviticus was some crack, wasn't he? For everyone that curseth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood shall be upon him. So that's self-explanatory. We'll go for one more. Let me see if I can get a crap banger for you here. Ooh. Men with wounded or missing male parts are not allowed in the church. Oh, here's one. This is a good one. Women will never teach or have authority over men. This is from Timothy. I permit no woman to teach or have authority over men. She is to be kept silent. That's cracker. There's not really much I could say beyond that. That's self-explanatory. Yeah. Yeah. So, there we go. Dumb shit that's in the Bible. You're welcome. Onwards. We've done the cows, we've done the Bible, we've done the Zionist, and now we're going to go to the lunacy that is Twitter. So, yeah, so I've got another thing. I got a wee bit of local stuff here, but I'll do it at the end, because it is all connected to Gaza, obviously. But how long have I been going? I'm going about 30, 40 minutes, so that's okay. We have a bit of time. So I want to play you. I wanted to encourage you. No, I'll do this first. So, you know who Ursula von der Leyen is? I'm going to play you. You can watch this on the video if you want. This is going to be going up on YouTube. But I encourage you to go and find it, or if you want to watch it, obviously. This woman is an evil fucker, and she comes just, it's just European royalty by another name. It's let them eat cake shit. And so this is
very much
Miss. Citizens arrest, you are charged with aiding genocide in Gaza.
So, Ursula von der Leyen is the podium about to give a speech or an announcement of some sort, and some dude with an Irish accent, I'm delighted to say, has interrupted her. And the look on the woman's face, she smiled the entire time. So, she's just smiling at him. It's disgusting. So, check it out. He's being dragged out, and she's just smirking.
You are a war, you are a criminal. Free Palestine! Free Palestine!
And she's just smirking at him the whole time. And that is the look of that is what's called a smug cunt. And don't tell me I'm some sort of phobe or ist because I said that. I'm not. It's beyond fucking horrible. And the comments underneath are as equally unforgiving as Nazi princess. Someone's called her here. But there we go. And so here's... I'm going to fly through these, so we're not going to be much longer. I wanted to encourage you to go and follow a guy. If you do... TikTok, you should follow this dude. Now, I'm going to do a bit on TikTok. I'll probably do this next week. I don't use TikTok much myself. We do have one for the band, but it wouldn't be my cup of tea now. But this is a weird thing that's happening with TikTok. In America, at the minute, the Congress is trying to force through a bill. Well, not trying to force it through. It's going to succeed. They're trying to get TikTok. They're going to force TikTok to be sold. They're going to sell it to... I don't know who they fucking sell it to, but basically they're accusing TikTok of all sorts of things, you know, being an arm of the Chinese government and all this sort of stuff, which it fucking isn't. But it's personally, I don't think it's any better or any worse than any of the other social media platforms. They're all horrible places. But this is the important part. What I think of TikTok is neither here nor there. This is the important bit. Everybody in America is on fucking TikTok, and the youth are getting their news from it. And it is causing, so much so, that it is causing a significant change to the political establishment and the landscape. And the youth aren't falling for this. They're not falling for this Gaza, Palestine thing. They're not falling for Russia being the bad guy in the world whenever they're watching their own country doing what they're doing. They're not falling for it. And they're getting, one of the reasons that they're not falling for it is because people like this guy I'm about to show you is on TikTok explaining things beautifully in those little TikTok 60-second moments, isn't it? 60 seconds? I don't know. But anyway, here we go. I'll play this for you and tell me what you think. Need to load it in. So they're actually going to try... They're basically buying TikTok.
We got community.
So there's a guy called... If you do TikTok, he's a guy called Rathbone. He's on Instagram as well. So here he's explaining that he was doing a video about Iran and about the Iranian response to the Israeli bombing of their embassy in Damascus. You know, that thing happened last week. So here he is explaining. He got community noted. Now, I want to show you this, because I'm sure you know most of the information in it, but can you imagine being a 20-year-old American on TikTok and this is what you see in such a concise way? And it is really concise. Now, some people will say it's attention deficit disorder, but it is concise. There's no doubt about it. And he gets all the information that you need is in there and more. Check it out.
He noted on Twitter, it says, this video shows multiple U.S. military bases that no longer exist. The U.S. vacated their bases in Uzbekistan in 2005 and Kyrgyzstan in 2014. U.S. also left Afghanistan in 2021 and Pakistan in 2017, or perhaps even earlier. In addition, the community would like you to know that there are no American military bases in Turkmenistan.
Ah!
There's only 36 bases surrounding Iran and not 40. Take that, commie. Thank you to the community for proving my point for me, which was that the United States enjoys military dominance over the Middle East. Iran's not completely encircled. There's no base in Turkmenistan or Kyrgyzstan. I'm not owned. Do you guys not understand that the U.S. fucking 5th Fleet is headquartered in Bahrain, which is across the Persian Gulf from Iran? Here's yet another updated map of the military presence of the United States in the Middle East, at Iran's doorstep. Do you understand that the community notes is a pedantic point? Iran is completely existentially threatened by the United States, and Iran does not posture the same way towards the Western Hemisphere where the United States is located. There are no foreign bases surrounding the United States. The United States would never tolerate that. The United States has roughly 800 military bases worldwide. No country comes even close. You can cope about that fact as much as you want. But this is the world that we live in. The United States has so many military bases around the world that we've lost count. No one really knows for sure. That's not even including the black sites, military bases that we don't even know about. The United States has an entire fleet of Ohio-class submarines. Just one of these nuclear submarines can destroy 200 cities worldwide, doesn't matter where they are. No other country has this capability. Not to mention our fleet of aircraft carriers. It's not like we've got 3 aircraft carriers parked outside in the Persian Gulf and the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea right now. Does Iran threaten any other region in the world? No. Do I reiterate my point that Iran is completely encircled by United States military bases, whether they're floating or whether they're land bases? Yes, of course. But leave it to the Twitter gooner gang of reply guys to simp for imperialism without shame.
So, isn't that class? I wish I was as concise as that. I am a fucking waffler, as you. Well, really, Andy? Yeah, I know. We hadn't noticed. Thank you. But yeah, and that's why TikTok was being taken down. So, and it is actually, it's going to, you're going to see this happening this year. It's going to happen before the US election. All this stuff, and you got to, whenever you're considering world affairs, you have to consider the US election. It's coming in, it's in November, right? And it's between the scurry orange fella and Genocide Joe, who should be in a nursing home. So these things all have to be taken into context together. So, but I do want to do a bit more on TikTok for you to show you what's going on. So I'll do a wee bit of research into it, and I know quite a bit about it, but I'll back up my arguments with points and stuff. So here's I want to show you another video, and this is now moving on into basic socialism. Now, last weekend there was a thing called UFC 300. We know, Andrew. We know. I know you know. I'm just saying. So, well, what has that got to do with socialism? I'm going to explain this to you now. One of the fighters, one of the Brazilian fighters, when he was talking after his fight, said this. Check this out. So I'll put it back.
I love property, and let me tell you something. If you care about your fucking country, I'll read Ludwig von Mises and the 6 lessons of the Austrian Economic School, motherfuckers. I love.
So, if you couldn't make out what he was saying, he said, I love private property, and let me tell you something, if you care about your fucking country, read Ludwig von Mises and the 6 lessons of the Austrian Economic School, motherfuckers. Right? So, what has that got to do with socialism? Well, the Austrian Economic is, it's, well, I'm not going to go into it right now, I'm not going to bore you, but I'm going to read you this, article. It's not an article. It is, let me just get this on the screen for you again. If you want to go and See what I'm doing? I'm talking here. I'm talking to you here. Just moving some stuff. There we go. So, someone I follow here, Socialist MMA, Nick Cruz. He runs a channel called the Revolutionary Blackout Network. He's very, very good. It used to be called the Fred Hampton Left. They changed it to the Revolutionary Blackout Network. They're great. They're really, really good. He's an MMA fan. So he put up this post regarding this fighter who, what's his name? I don't even know what his name is. What he said. So he's telling, he's saying, I love private property. That's what he said. And he was saying he loves owning things. He said, he expanded it more in this post-fight interview. And so Nick Cruz says, UFC fighters failed to unionize. In fact, many fighters are scabs who actually fought collective bargaining. The result has led, and this is the point, this is what you didn't know, the result has led to UFC fighters being by far the lowest paid athletes in terms of revenue sharing. While boxers make millions for title fights, UFC fights, after paying their team and other expenses, the fighters make less than their accountants. I remember Gray Maynard made $40K fighting Frankie Edgar for a world title once. Boxers make millions. All this so Dana White and UFC execs can be 100 millionaires. This is what libertarian economics led for UFC fighters and led to for UFC fighters, and some still praise it. Absolute pathetic cuck behavior. And that's what the Austrian Economics School is. It's libertarian economics. So he continues, there are countless stories about UFC fighters who are forced to work full-time because they make pennies. It's a giant thing in the MMA community, the poor pay they get. Despite that, many of these knuckleheads still shill for capitalism is unbelievable. Former world heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic, sorry, I mangled that name, was still working as a firefighter because he needed the extra financial security. The UFC even tried to convince him to leave his job because it's a bad luck to have the heavyweight champion to have a full-time job. For fans of the sport, why do you think all these fighters fight into their 40s and we have to beg them to retire? They have no long-term plan. They have no chance to retire. Many of them are fucked after their career, and many don't realise until it's too late. There's more. Where did that go? Sorry. There's more here, and it's just disappeared on me. Meanwhile, no, it's gone. I wanted to read all of that. Let's see. Oh, well done. Twitter's fucked. But anyway, so there's the point. So, a little bit of socialism for you there. And I didn't know that. I knew that the UFC fighters weren't particularly well paid. I watched UFC 300 today with my dad. And we were, one of the fighters, there was a massive knockout. There was a very spectacular knockout between two warriors, Gaethje and Holloway. And Holloway shouted at the end, I think there's a bonus check of $300,000, goes to the best fighter, whatever it is. And it's at Dana White's discretion. It's very sort of let them eat cake again. And he said in his post-match or post-fight interview, give me the, just sign the fucking check to me and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so there we go. It's interesting, isn't it? It's very sad. And whenever you see that guy in that little clip I showed you is Brazilian. And Brazil is an example of neoliberal economics, you know, classic Chicago school economics being played out in real life, where you don't have a middle class, you have a lower class and an upper class. And that's the plan. That's where capitalism is going to lead us all to eventually, where we're all, we're supposedly free. We're not slaves and we're not serfs, but we're not going to notice the difference. You know, you're effectively not going to notice the difference. And the thing that's going to keep you pacified is if you believe the propaganda. You know, I own a car. I own, like, I was talking with someone the other day, and the we were talking about when working class people call themselves capitalists. And it always makes me laugh because they clearly don't understand what they're saying. Capitalist is someone that makes money from investing their capital. They don't work. If you have to get up in the morning and go to work to earn a living, you're not a capitalist. You may be an aspiring capitalist, as my friend Parg said about it, but you're not a capitalist. And you can see that with this guy fighting. I just wonder, unless he gets millions in the bank, he's probably going to end up going down the career path of most MMA fighters, which is UFC fighters, which is broke and broken with medical bills. And, you know, by the time they're in their 40s, I wonder if he's going to be saying the same thing then, because it's socialism or death, people. These are our options. So I'm going to call it. That's an R. That's plenty from me. I'm going to put the theme on because I like it. And it's a wee bit nostalgic at this point, isn't it? Yeah, so I'm going to finish up. Thanks for listening. Please like, share, subscribe. It's nice to be back. I took a good long break there for a while. Actually, well, as you know, I didn't really intend to come back to it, but I had a number of people asking me to please start again. So here I am. I'm going to do it. And and just in the, I should tell you, just in the interest of clarity, in the past wee while, I've actually joined People Before Profit. I officially joined the party. I have my little card and my wallet and everything, so I'm very happy about that. I always said that I would join People Before Profit if they turned up in Lurgan, and they're leading the way with the protesting and the agitating for Loch Ness, which is a very, as you know, if you know me, you know it's very important and precious to me. So they're leading that, and I felt like a bit of a hypocrite when I sort of considered all the things that I had said to myself in the past, that I would join them if they did arrive here in the town, if I got a chance to vote for them. So I did. So just to let you know, so I'm obviously going to be people, I'm, you know, I'm quite biased towards People Before Profit and all the Sinn Féin and the Irish leftist parties anyway, People Before Profit being the most left of them all. So, and I'm going to continue to do that. I'm not going to make any, I'm not going to shy away from that. But I just wanted to let you know, in the interest of clarity, in the interest of honesty. I've a few things I didn't get to. That's okay. I can get to them next time. I think I'm going to hit that TikTok thing the next time, explain a bit more about that for you. It is very interesting, and it just shows you how propaganda works. But, and so what else? What date is it? It is the 19th. Friday the 19th, and we will be, oh yeah, gigs. So we're playing Kilkenny Roots, the Bonnevilles are playing Kilkenny Roots on the 4th and 5th of May. We're playing Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival in Belfast on the 11th, I think it is. Yeah, the 11th. It's a Saturday afternoon gig. And then we've got a Chuck Hill down here at the house. Mandy Bingham's going to be coming and playing, but I'll tell you more about that next week. So, yeah. Toodle pip, everybody. Take care. Have a good weekend.